Everybody, Jake and Gino here, and today we are going to the top of the mountain, Gino. We are going to discuss what is a multifamily syndication. Now, many of you out there may be saying, dudes, we know what this is. Well, good for you for being so damn smart, because Gino and I owned probably 1,000 apartments before we even did a syndication or even knew what these things really were. So great for you super smart folks out there, but today we're going to unpack what we know about syndications, to shine a little light to help the folks out there in the field. Now, Gino, again, we did a lot of apartments before we did a syndication. We did a lot of apartments, but even before we did agency debt. So prior to actually being a syndicator, being, you know, a general partner on a syndication, sponsor, et cetera, tell me what you envisioned, because we all have these preconceived notions of how things are until we actually do them. And then we realized, oh, this is not as hard as I thought it was, or this is what it is. So tell me, you know, where you were. I think the first one we did was 2018, maybe somewhere around there. Tell me, you know, leading up to that, what you thought it was and then what it actually looked like.
Jake, let's take a stroll down memory lane. Back in 2013, on our first deal, syndication was not a hot topic.
I didn't even know about it.
There was not a lot of money. It's always been around, right? Yeah. It's just really pooling of money, but it wasn't prevalent because there was not a lot of money around. There was no appetite for it. Then the Jobs Act came, changed it around. It made it a lot easier. So things started changing around 2015 and 2016. My fear, my limiting belief was I didn't want to have other partners, and by other partners, meaning investors. It's a different business model. When you have a syndication, you're running the deal, but then you're also running investors. So for me, I wanted to learn how to run and buy these properties just with you, Jake, and just with our other partner, just the three of us, right, bro? Just the three of us, because I didn't want to be overwhelmed. I didn't want to have John calling me here telling me, hey, where's my money? But that's what it was for us. And we were doing so well buying it ourselves. And once again, I always like to reference this. What are your goals? We're going to jump into this a little bit later. But for Jake and myself, we were equity hounds. I don't need 30,000 units. 1,000 units that I own myself. And I've spoken to tons of syndicators, and they'll tell you, the cuff, I'd rather have a 40 or 50 unit deal where I own 100% of the equity than have a 150 unit deal where I'm syndicating. There's a lot of reasons for that. One of the reasons, when you have all the equity, you own it yourself. You can make all of these decisions. You are your own boss. If Jake and Gino have septic fields blowing up, or somebody passes out in an apartment, or something happens and we can't get paid that month, well, Jake, guess what? No cash flow. Really hard to say that to an investor. But once again, like I said, that's a limiting belief. As you start building your business, you can get in front of that and talk to the investors. It's a tool in the toolbox. I love syndication for the fact that you can go out, and if you can't reach out and get a deal that's really big, well, syndicate the deal. Start raising capital for a larger deal. Get out of your comfort zone. When we started out, we didn't know what we didn't know. Jake and Gino are not two sharp crayons, man. You know that crayon box? We're not the sharp ones out there. So we just started buying deals like everybody else. And I wish I'd known syndication sooner. But Jake, you asked me about our first deal. I remember our first syndication. You should tell the story, but it was looking at the deals, the last deal of the day. You see the tractor, the mom and pop. We buy it at 45 a door. And we're like, you know what? This is the perfect syndication. And I would recommend everybody, if you're going to syndicate your first deal, make sure you have mentors out there. Make sure you have a team that's done it before. Because even for us on the first syndication, I was just going to say, it's a different kind of process, because you need to raise capital. You need to do it proper. You need to get proper documents, have a syndication attorney. It's really a different level of complexity. Right. It's not just you yourself.
You got to go from zero to hero, though. Like, there's guys out there that try to wing a bunch of things when they're doing a deal on their own. Like, I've even heard stories of guys trying to do their own real estate and purchase and sale agreement contracts.
Yeah.
You can't do that shit when you're syndicating, guys. No. You got to do it by the books. Mm-hmm. Syndication attorney, title attorney, purchase and sale agreement attorney. You got to get your ducks in a row and be very professional. So I think if you're not ready for that yet, then man, you know.
Or get on a team that's syndicating a deal, and you syndicate a deal with them if you're not ready. That's why for us, the level of comfort, we're buying deals ourselves. It's sad to say, but if we mess up, it's just our money. It's not our investors' money. That was, like I said, a limiting belief. But now I'm a fiduciary. If I lose my money, it's just as painful if I'm losing my investors' money. So I've changed my mind shift on that.
It's almost more painful if you're losing someone else's money, because you're letting people down.
Yes.
You know, and on the flip side, you know, if you're doing a deal yourself, you get all the upside too. So,
yes. Right? But look at your business plan, everybody out there. And not every deal is a deal you syndicate. You may find a 40 or 50 unit deal and you buy it internally. And like, you know what? I have enough capital or I have enough partners where I can partner up and buy this deal by myself. But hey, this 150 unit deal where it's just a little bit out of my reach, I can't, maybe that's a deal where you go out and you syndicate and you raise money for that deal. So keep an open mind. And that's why when you're underwriting deals, make sure they all fit. Some deals may be done great creatively. Some deals, JV and partnering by yourself with a couple other people. And some deals just make sense syndicating.
Okay. So here we go, gang. Quite simply put, syndication, it's a partnership between several investors. You're going to have your general partner, commonly referred to as the GP. These are going to be your sponsors. These are going to be your people that have done agency deals before. You know, typically starting, you know, you're going to have somebody with experience here most of the time on that GP side. Then you're going to have your LP, okay? These are going to be your limited partners. This is a GP-LP structure, very common. This is what we tend to see. Gino, in the, you know, let's just say typical syndications, what are, for multifamily, what are pros and cons that you're seeing?
So for a typical syndication now, the pros are you can get into bigger deals. I mean, that's the bottom line. The second pro that you have is if you have no money to get into multifamily, that's one of the biggest objections.
It's bootstrapping almost, right?
Yeah, well, syndicate a deal. You start syndicating a deal. That's a great way to get into it. Another one is OPM. You're using other people's money. You're leveraging other people's money. I mean, another pro, you're able to scale up real quick. You can get into thousands of units. Another pro, man, you're talking about diversification. You can syndicate a deal here, be part of a 300 unit deal here, be part of a 150 unit deal here. So you can see that the benefits are tremendous. There's a lot of really great benefits to syndicating deals. Now the cons, there's a couple of cons, and this is what, you know, for me and Jake, we look at this and we have to weigh the benefits and the cons. One of the cons is you don't have total control. It's not just you and the deal. You can't make all the decisions just what's based on the best for you. I think the second one, which I think really hurts Jake and myself, it's not a long-term mindset. It's more of a fix and flip kind of model when you get into syndication because investors are wanting their money back. We're all targeting an IRR, an internal rate of return. And hey, we're underwriting for a 3 to 5 year model. You know how hard it is to find a deal now that makes sense and you want to hold it long-term? Where most syndications out there, after 3 years, it's like, okay, I just returned a 62%. I don't care if I return money. I want to hold because I know I've learned over the last decade.
Cash flow is hard to find right now, folks.
That and also wealth is created by owning assets, not by buying these assets, fixing them up and flipping them, paying cap gains and going on to the next one. You could do that. But now if you go on to the next one, where you find the next deal? That's why for me, syndication is difficult because if I can't get into a deal and hold it for at least 10 years where I'm building wealth, I'm paying down some of that principle. I'm actually allowing this asset to appreciate.
Let it do the full job, right? Let the vehicle do the full amount of work.
Yes.
Real quick, Sam Freshman's two biggest mistakes.
Sam Freshman, old gentleman. He didn't buy enough and he sold too soon.
Yep. And he wrote the book that looks like the Bible for syndication. So the big red book, you remember the title of it? Anyways, look up Sam Freshman Syndications.
Well, go on the Jake and Gino channel. Yeah. We did a podcast with Sam Freshman. Go on the Jake and Gino channel.
Great
on
show.
iTunes.
Great
awesome
show.
Awesome show. Yeah. Great show.
I'm gonna use a baseball reference. Basically, you go from single A ball to the show. Okay, that's what syndication can do for you. Okay, it takes you from, you know, the piddly little onesies twosies to it can put you in the show right away. Meaning you're playing with the big boys. 150, 300 units, you put a team together, it's possible to go from zero to hero like that, but you need to be ready and prepared with your systems dialed in. So, you know, I think that there's a million different ways to do it. There's so many different ways to do this business. I mean, we started with a 25 unit, grew to 1,000 units before we syndicated. That's not typical, but damn, I love what we did and I wouldn't change it for anything. I love buying these things. But look, for some folks, syndication is a better, you know, way to start out. And then they may actually pivot to, you know, direct equity ownership like we have. For us, you want to have a diverse tool belt. You want to know all the strategies because guess what? The market is cyclical. Okay. That's why we have a development arm that we're working on right now because we want to be fluid and aggressive in any market cycle. So I think the having a syndication in your tool belt, boom, great. Being able to buy and hold, refi and roll, develop all these different strategies. If this is going to be your primary vehicle, your primary source for wealth, is the best strategy. So it's not just one, it's being able to do multiple strategies to keep it moving, man. You want that cash flowing, baby. That's the thing. You got to keep the cash flowing, right? You know,
Jake, you made a great point. Markets do cycle. Yeah. People do cycle. We may be talking 2 years from now where syndication is out of favor. Right now it's in favor because where we are in the part of the market cycle where these assets are, we're able to get this type of capital and put this type of capital together. Email me, Gino@jakeandgino.com. I'll give you a book, a free PDF copy of this, Passive Investing Made Simple. Coaches wrote this, Anthony and Dan Kruger. They wrote an amazing book about passive investing, and it talks about the syndication model, the pros and the cons. They've been able to scale up their portfolio. They're vertically integrated. They're using syndication as part of their business. It's a great way to get investors on board. So email me, Gino@jakeandgino.com, and I'll send you a free PDF copy.
Gino, just to close out, typical splits people are seeing. So what's the fee structure look like if you're really not familiar with these things? There's a set of the profits. So if you were to sell, you know, the asset, the GP is typically going to get 30% of that. Some, you know, people, you can look up waterfalls. Okay. You want to look up these things. Typically a acquisition fee, maybe acquisition fee, typically, Gino, what, 1%?
It depends, Jake.
It's 1 to 3%.
Usually
right?
1 to 3%. I mean, let's say you're doing a $50 million dollar deal. They'll charge you a 1 to 2%. So that is a significant amount of money. On our first syndication, it was a $6 million raise. We had a 3% acquisition fee. It's $180,000 cash flow day one to the syndication company, the syndication team, to the general partnership team. That's real money. 1% asset management fee. So the syndication company gets an asset management fee. Usually that is either of gross revenues, of rents, or typically of capital raise. So if you're raising $2 million for a deal, you're typically going to get 1% asset management fee of that $2 million, which is $20,000 a year to manage that asset. Not property management. This is asset management.
Yeah. And I think the 70-30 split, you know, holds the syndicators, the sponsors accountable because they need to perform to basically, you know, to get paid that percentage. So that's typically what we're seeing out there. Yeah, Gino, you got one more thing?
Yeah, one other thing, Jake. You know, what's a preferred rate of return? I mean, we have to keep an eye on these pref rates. I mean, preferred rate of return typically is that hurdle rate where all of the first whatever percentage, you know, traditionally the last few years, it's been 8%. So let's say a deal is generating 8%. That 8%, all of it goes to the limited partners. Let's say you generate 10% one quarter. 8% goes all to the limited partners, then that remaining, depending on how it's written, that other 2% may go to the general partnership or may get split between the limited partners and the general partners. So you traditionally have to offer a preferred rate of return because limited partners want to know that they're getting paid first. They're the ones who are putting all the skin in the game. The general partners are doing something very important, everybody. They're signing on the debt. They're taking the risk, right? But for the most part, they're only putting up maybe 10 or 15% of the capital. The limited partners are the ones who are putting up the capital. So usually, you know, in this part of the cycle, we're seeing between 6 and 8% as a preferred rate of return.
Yeah. And keep in mind, there's a catch up too, because we just were bidding on a $31 million asset. And the thing about it, the rents were under market. And I don't even really think the current ownership was doing something wrong. It's just inflation is going nuts and they weren't able to push rents quick enough. So I wouldn't be surprised if the average rent on, you know, per unit is up $400 in the next, say, 3-4 years on this asset they were bidding on, but you weren't going to hit your 8 pref from the beginning. There's going to be a catch up on the back end, I think. But the crazy thing is these assets are selling like every 2 years now because there's rampant inflation, there's demand, yada, yada. So we're just not seeing a lot of things get pulled through according to the pro forma, right? Or what we're seeing, the projections, because the market is just on fire right now. So what does the future hold? Nobody knows. We're going to keep in it. We're going to keep being disciplined, looking for that cash flow, because if, you know, look, at the end of the day, if it don't cash flow at some point, let the grass grow, right? Because you got to get that money, man. You got to make sure these things are positive. Gino, great job today. Appreciate your wisdom, sir. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Jake.